Today, get behind this economic solution. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. I'm joined by Robbie Barwick today. Hi, Robbie.
Hi, Martin.
How are you going?
Yeah, good. I'm quite busy, actually, because Parliament resumes in a week from today. So that's why we're having this discussion, because we need to make a big impression on the politicians and get a very important economic solution on the agenda. But it takes a lot of work, so I'm flat out. That's how I'm going.
Fair enough. But this is a very important conversation. And what's interesting is that there is support building actually across the aisles, really, for a different way of thinking about banking and finance in Australia. And seeing what we've seen in the last few months with, frankly, the mortgage rates going all over the place, the banks still doing silly things, and the economic fallout, this is a really important conversation at this time, isn't it?
It is. We put out a release yesterday where we predicted that while naturally the incoming government has an agenda, it's will be increasingly overtaken by events, dear boy, events, as Harold Macmillan famously said, British Prime Minister, and in this case, economic events, because there is a full-blown economic crisis brewing, and it's a cost-of-living crisis broadly. That's how it's showing up. Everyone can feel that. I don't have to explain that part of it to people. And the government has to address it. And there's a tool, Martin, there's a tool that a government can use to address the growing costs in the economy, the cost of living crisis, through investment, through making local economies work better. That the only reason they wouldn't is ideology. And it's the ideology, the neoliberal ideology we've had for, you know, four decades, that governments shouldn't be involved in any of these aspects of the economy. Well, it's wrong. We've had that. The results are in. It's a mess. We've got to turn it around. It's going to require a lot of investment. There's going to be sections of the economy that, frankly, need to crash, like the housing market, it's because it's unaffordable. But we have to replace that so as not to have a massive dislocation and catastrophe. That the investment that's gone into there has to be replaced by investment that goes into productive areas, and there's a way to do that. There's a solution. And we need to get behind the solution and as one voice, demand the government implement it. And that's why we're campaigning very hard for our policy of a postal bank, a public postal people's bank, like the original Commonwealth Bank was.
Yeah, and just to underscore that, you know, the statistics are in. We know that compared with 20 or 30 years ago, most of the retail banks have just lent for mortgage business over and against investment in small businesses and medium businesses. So SMEs really struggle in terms of trying to get funding for their businesses at the moment. The banks are highly leveraged and highly exposed to the housing market because they've pumped up the value of property. They've pumped up the volume of mortgages that they've written. And of course, ANZ's now sucking up Suncorp just to dominate yet more of the industry. But this is not actually productive use of capital. It's not productive investment. And so the whole question is, how do we restart and rekindle investment in things that are important for Australia's future? And that's infrastructure and also particularly lending for the small business sector.
Exactly, exactly. So we have a policy, a proposal and legislation for a postal bank, a public bank, a government bank, which you mentioned the Suncorp sale to ANZ. It's just another example of how the big four, this oligopoly that control our banking system in Australia, devour everything around them. And a new private bank cannot match that. And what happens is if they're successful, they get bought up. Or if they're often unsuccessful, they fall by the way. We need a public bank owned by the government to match that strength of the big four. And in fact, beat them at their own game, force them to compete, show that you can provide banking services more efficiently. And people might think, what are you talking about? How can the public sector provide it more efficiently? Well, easily, by not demanding maximum profit. That's why. Keeping the value in the community, provide the service first. It will be plenty profitable, but that's not its remit. Its remit is to invest in what Australia needs. And it will allow what the bank forgoes in profit is what the people of Australia will profit. That's how it's going to work. So we've got the proposal, we've got the legislation. What we have is a new parliament. We have to get it through to them. And what I'd like to do, Martin, is just go through. We've developed a PowerPoint campaign here, so we can keep this efficient today. I want to go through the PowerPoint campaign, the PowerPoint presentation, so people can see the various aspects of this explained quite well. But before I do, just to premise it, we're doing this because we're going to ask you, the viewer, to get on the phone this week and make one call and send one email to your local member of parliament to tell them about the campaign and tell them you want them to support this campaign. And it's got to be done this week. We need you to watch this show, see what we're talking about, and get on the phone and do it. Now, if you're of a certain age, you will remember when we had the Commonwealth Bank before it was privatized. And you might even be old enough to remember the decades of banking before that, right? And what you and some of the things you may remember is a different banking culture to what exists today. Let me warn you, I don't want to sound apocalyptic about it, but if we don't get this back soon, get a public bank back soon, we're going to have a majority of Australians who never remember the Commonwealth Bank. Right. And then all they're going to do is have a perspective on banking provided to them by the current bankers. But what we have now, that memory that people have, is quite powerful. And if you remember that, that's what we want to replicate again. And before I go through the PowerPoint, I just want to rattle off what I went through in our press release about this yesterday, because the 15th, it's now the 19th of July, Martin. The 15th of July was the 110th anniversary of the establishment of the Commonwealth Bank in Australia. And it opened up in post offices. It started off as a postal bank. Now, we're proposing the same thing, except we want to keep ours as permanently a postal bank. But this is what it did in its first decade. This is what that bank did as a postal bank. It provided affordable banking services to people who otherwise didn't have access, including to remote workers and soldiers far away in Europe in World War I. It provided financial stability. It famously averted a national bank run in 1914. It said there was going to be a bank run. There was a world financial emergency. And it said it averted it in Australia by announcing we stand behind all the banks, not just our bank. And because it was a public bank, it helped keep interest rates low. It invested in important local infrastructure all over Australia, including through loans to local councils for transportation infrastructure and electrification to boost local industries. It saved Australia's primary producers when their export markets were disrupted by World War I. It saved them. It literally saved them through financing commodities pools and other things. When the war was over and the returned soldiers came home, it financed affordable homes for returned soldiers and built them all around the country, affordable housing. And then that was in its first decade. And then it later expanded into a powerful national bank, which invested in industries, including the establishment of the car industry and in other pressing national needs, including the largest expansion of social housing of any time in Australian history before and since. And that was true. The Commonwealth Bank funded housing commissions when they were set up in 1945. And it built 90,000 housing commission homes in Australia. And today, when we have a dire need for social housing and everyone's talking about it, the best predictions don't even come in terms of the best promises by politicians don't even come close to the scale of what the Commonwealth Bank achieved in the decade after World War II. This is what a public bank can do. Who doesn't like that idea? Only one sector, the bankers. That's all the private bankers who exist, who think they should have a monopoly on banking and bank to maximize profit. They are the ones who don't want a public bank. For everybody else, it's a godsend, right? And that's why we need to get behind it. So We're going to ask you to make a call, and I'll explain more at the end, but we'll have the link below. And what we need to do is send an email to your member of parliament. You're going to have to find who they are. You just voted, so remember the name of your electorate you voted in. Call them up. Click on the link. Find that member of parliament, that electorate. Get their email. Send them an email telling them that you want them to support the postal bank campaign, and then call up their office at least to see if they got the email. And then if they haven't got it, you know, they'll confirm they've got the email. And if you want to talk to them more about it, go ahead and talk to them more about it then. But that call is essential. And that's what we want you to do today, because Parliament resumes in a week from today. And we want this to start percolating in that building immediately, because there's a new government. And while they do have an agenda, they don't have much of an agenda. And like I said, it's going to be overtaken by the financial crisis. This is an economic solution, right, which will transform Australia. So let's just go through this efficiently. Campaign for a public post office bank. These are the contents. I won't spend too much time on that. You can freeze the screen if you want to read that. Okay. This is what makes this a very efficient proposal already, because the infrastructure is already there. This is the biggest retail network in Australia, Martin. And let me tell you, I did some checking to confirm that. Do you know Coles has the biggest shopping network in Australia? They've got 2,000 stores. Woolies has just over 1,000 stores. IGA has about 600. McDonald's has fewer than 1,000 restaurants in Australia, McDonald's. It seems to be everywhere. There's a retail footprint for you. This is 4,320 post offices. 2,850 of them are licensed post offices. They run as small businesses. This is the biggest retail network in Australia. Look at the geographic spread in this network, right? Look at all those dots in the middle of Australia. If Australia Post doubles as a bank, if you can bank at Australia Post, not bank through Australia Post like you can do now, bank at Post. If you can bank at Australia Post, if you can bank with the post office, because it's a post office bank as well, you will never be far away from a bank branch. Very, very important. So that's what makes it an efficient proposal to start with, a low-cost way to start up a public bank.
And Robbie, just one point, of course, it's worth bearing in mind that all of the major retail banks have been shutting branches, particularly in regional areas, but now more than regional areas. So, in fact, their branch footprint has been shrinking.
Yep.
Relative to the post office networks that still exist. And so this is the most effective way of providing banking services on your doorstep.
Well, our friend Dale Webster, as you know, Martin, has documented this and done enormous work. This is what we were talking about earlier. 62% regional Australia has lost 62% of its banks since 1975. It's a loss of 1,738 banks in 1,003 regional towns, cities and coastal communities in just over 45 years. Just 1,064 remain open. This is now already out of date. It's 1,050. There are 146 communities in Australia, regional Australia, that only have one bank. Of these, 92 have no minor banks to fall back on. There's 578 towns that have lost all their banks now. ANZ is the smallest regional network with just 191 of its 615 branches outside metropolitan cities still open. They've cut their regional network by 69%. If you're a Suncorp customer, be afraid. Westpac has the second smallest. They've slashed by 70.5% of non-metropolitan branches. NAB has cut 59%. Commonwealth Bank has the biggest one, but it's still a 49% reduction. Okay, here's a list of the towns that have no bank at all. I'll leave that up there. Just for a second, you can pause the video and have a look if you want. There's a list on our website, by the way, that people can look at. Just for a few seconds, I'll just jump through. Like I said, pause the video if you want to see more. These are the benefits of the Australia Post network. Guess what? The banks will either vacate the field and let the post office bank have all the customers, because if they keep doing what they're doing now, or they'll say, We don't want to lose all our customers to the post office bank. We better stop shutting branches. That's what competition can do, right? So this is, you know, and that'll benefit everybody. One of the virtues of the post office already and why would make a good bank. Seven benefits of a public post office bank. Guarantee financial services for all through the branch network, as I said. Let me also explain all. There's a few aspects to all. All communities, because Australia Post is obliged to maintain by law to maintain its postal network, its branch network. So all communities that have a post office will have a bank, and it'll and keep that bank. Plus, because it's a public institution, it will not be allowed to discriminate like the private banks do, and therefore it will not be allowed to debank anybody or any legitimate business. So if you're a legitimate person, whatever whatever the definition of that is, if you're a real person, if you're a person, let's put it that way, if you're a person, you'll be able to bank at the post office. If you're a legitimate business, you'll be able to bank at the post office. So what the banks are doing now of discriminating against legitimate businesses through banking, debanking will end. And we've covered that before, Martin, you know, on the show, in the context of the cash ban campaign. You know, there's some businesses that the banks frown on for no good reason. Just, you know, they sometimes cast moral judgment on some of these businesses. And as one senator said, who are the banks to cast moral judgment on anybody? But when they debank in packs. So the poor business will be told, oh, we're shutting your bank account. We're ending doing business with you. And then they go to another bank, to open a bank account there, and the bank refuses. And they find themselves on some sort of a blacklist or something, right? This will end that. Guarantee all deposits. If you bank with a, this will be a government-owned bank, right? You don't need the financial claim scheme deposit guarantee. This bank will only go broke if the Australian government goes broke, right? And because of the way it works, it's not going to go broke anyway, because it's not going to be involved in risky speculative things. So your deposits will be guaranteed in this bank and fully guaranteed, not, you know, the financial claim scheme, which as you and I know, Martin, doesn't work anyway. But if it did work, at best they say guarantee deposits up to $250,000 per bank. This just guarantees all deposits. Watch what happens. Watch how the people of Australia vote in the next financial crisis if we have a bank that guarantees all deposits. It'll ensure the financial viability for Australia Post and licensed post offices. And this part's just a no-brainer. This is how the smart countries around the world are going. They're combining postal services with public banking services, and that provides the extra revenue that makes sure they can maintain both services as an essential service. The postal service is an essential service. The banking service, our parliament has designated an essential service. And on their own, the post office struggles, but if you combine it with banking, it'll maintain the viability. And for the network of 2,850 licensed post offices who have a terrible relationship with Australia Post, they get screwed all the time. They buy, you know, there are some licensed post offices, Martin, who bought, because it's a small business, they buy the post office. I know a case is near you, actually. People who bought the post office for $400,000, you know, in the last decade. Today, they can't sell it for $50,000. That's how badly the post offices have done over the treatment of Australia Post. It's terrible. It was done under managed. Christine Holgate tried to change it, but there was a general management push, which the current board is still complicit in, to set up Australia Post to be privatised by making a disaster and then saying, oh, see, it's got to be privatised. And the people who've suffered are the small business people who run your local post office. This will go back to what Christine Holgate intended, which is what got her in trouble because she made an enemy of the banks. It'll go back to that, though, and make Australia Post fully viable again, right? And then when it's fully viable, then we can put proper management back into Australia Post that can solve all those other stupid problems that have been created, like why your mail is so late everywhere whenever you try and send it. Ensure cash availability and cash payments. Super important. The private banks want to get rid of cash purely for profit reasons, and they will profit from the data that comes from forcing everyone's transactions to be electronic, and from through electronic transactions being able to take a cut of every transaction. That's how the banks, in the 90s, the bank's model shifted from a model where they made their money by helping you make money to one where they made their money anyway by taking a cut of everything you do and trying to talk you into doing more things they could take a cut of. Remember when you used to, when it started in the 90s, you'd go into the local bank and so you just want to cash your, back then I still got paid in a check every week, and you'd have to go to the bank and put it in your bank account. They're trying to flog your, insurance or a mortgage or whatever, right? And just you think, I'm just queued up here for 45 minutes to be able to put this in the bank account. I don't want all this stuff. And they will be under heavy pressure to do that. That was the banking model changed. The attitude to cash is driven by the same model. It hasn't fundamentally changed since then. And that's why they want to get rid of cash. The postal bank will make sure cash always remains as an option in the economy, because it would be insane not to have cash in the economy.
And Robbie, just let me come on there. I want to highlight one of the things that I find very disturbing is the excuse which is used by the retail banks, which is that everyone's gone digital, right? You don't need the branch networks, you don't need cash, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let me just, a couple of inconvenient truths. The first is there's actually more cash in circulation now than there ever was. Point one. And point two, we know of a lot of businesses and individuals who still don't use and don't want to use digital and frankly feel forced if they are, taken that direction. And in fact, for them, using face-to-face services and also using cash is a civil right which should be secured and maintained, right? There is absolutely no excuse for forcing people to essentially go down into the digital environment, which is completely dependent on availability of power, has a number of security issues attached to it, as well as massive inconvenience rather than convenience. So this is a really important observation. Now, I'm not anti-digital per se, but it should not be imposed top-down simply because the banks want to make even more money from you, right? And going right back to what you said earlier on, the problem is that the banks are driven ultimately by that 15 to 20% return they have to make to shareholders, right? And the whole point is that is money that should not be actually flowing back to international shareholders predominantly, by the way. It should be actually flowing back into Australia and Australians by making banking services cheaper and providing services directly to those who need them. This is why this is such an important conversation.
And can I point out, in case people haven't thought about it, I get some callous individuals who tell me bluntly that grandma should learn electronic banking, because some grandmas have, and good on them. That's the way of the future. They should learn electronic banking. Well, let me appeal to you to at least accept that when you're engaged in a banking transaction, you want to feel confident and secure. Now, I don't know about you, Martin, but I've had to learn to not answer my phone when I get a call from a number I don't know. Because if they're real, they're trying to sell me something. Half of them are not real, though, and they're recurring calls from people like Amazon, for instance. Oh, we're calling, your Amazon whatever that is, your Amazon subscription is due for renewal and whatever. And it's every one of those calls is some form of a scam. Now, sometimes you learn the hard way, but or you learn from other people's experience that's the system we have now. And we're being scammed. We're being targeted with scams all the time. Now, I'm somewhat sophisticated. I can recognize that and not fall for it. But there's plenty of people who aren't, and they hear about these scams, and they're terrifying. Yep. They're absolutely terrifying. And if you're telling them, you must sit at a computer and do your banking, and they've seen the documentaries, they've seen the news reports of someone in exactly their same position doing exactly the same thing, 100% legitimately, and getting totally scammed by doing it, and all the money in their bank account disappearing. If I happily use electronic banking because it's a convenience, but for my transacting, I use cash. But if you are bastard enough to say you have the right to force people down that path, well, screw you. And I was someone who campaigned very hard against Uber for instance, and what pissed me off about Uber was the attitude of Australian politicians that because it was an app in the information technology superhighway, that meant no questions asked. It should be able to do whatever it wanted. And all that app did was allow Uber to break the law. And politicians happily facilitated it because they got stars in their eyes about, oh, this is where technology is going. Now we know from the Uber files just how corrupt that whole process was all along. But you know what? There's no point finding out about that, what I was saying in 2019, in 2022, that all comes to light, because all those hardworking taxi drivers have been wiped out. Little nonnas, I'm in Coburg in Melbourne, little nonnas who retired on, you know, like whose husbands left them two or three banking licenses because they drove taxis for 60 years to earn those banking licenses. And yeah, you can say they got too much, but that was their investment that all got wiped out because politicians totally callously didn't care about the consequences, said no, this is the electronic future. This is where we go. Well, you know, this has got to stop, right? We need to recognize that if technological process is legitimate, people will, if it's real progress, people will take it up. You do not force it. And the way the banks are trying to do that in this case must be resisted. And it's why we fought to stop the cash ban. But they're going to keep doing it. We stopped the government banning cash, but we haven't been able to stop the banks shutting branches and ripping out ATMs and making it harder and harder for people to use cash. That's why we need a public alternative to that, right? And that's it. And that's what the common good, a commitment to the common good, would ensure. And that's why we're fighting for this bank.
Yeah, and Robbie, right. I'll just add two things. One is you actually mentioned a couple of times banking licenses when you meant taxi licenses, but I didn't stop you because you were on your long run, and I thought it was actually just worth continuing. The second point is that you know, the security of your personal data and the risks, click through on this link, you know, those things are real, right? And the latest ACCC ScamWatch report highlighted the significant increase in digital related crimes. So these risks are real. And my view is, until such time as those risks have been negated, we should rightly be cautious about all of these digital services. And we should not put our whole future, frankly, into a phone or into a particular set of technologies. And I make the point again, which stop when the power goes out.
Yep.
Now, we are, of course, in the middle of a power crisis at the moment, and there are risks at the moment in Victoria, right? Your power might be going out because there isn't enough gas. It's very important that we don't just get so digitalized that we effectively become completely incapable of doing anything when the power goes out. So, again, it's very important to have the right sort of range of technologies available. And, you know, cash as a technology works very well. So that's another reason why this is an important conversation as well.
Yeah, no, that's true. Okay, let's move on. Lend to local small businesses and invest in local areas. Crucial, absolutely crucial. Now, Martin, I had a conversation last night with a prominent economist. I won't name him, but he's known to both of us. He told me why he supported the postal bank, or one of the things he supported about the postal bank idea. And he said, look, we need to go back to lending being managed locally, because at the moment what happens is the lending decisions are made in the head office in Sydney or whatever, and they have no sense of the local community. And he gave me the example. He gave me an example of a family rift because someone who couldn't get a loan for a legitimate business and it's a good business had to borrow from a family member. And of course, you know, as Polonius said to Laertes in Hamlet, neither a borrower nor a lender be, because when it comes to family and friends, it's very good advice, because there's nothing like money to blow things up, and that's what's happened. Anyway, he explained to me that his support was because there was no local banking authority to be able to recognize the quality of that loan and make it, right? Which is why a family member had to stump up. Now,
and just let me just add on that, because my dad was a bank manager in the old-fashioned mode, right? He was the pillar of the local community along with the vicar and the doctor, right? And he knew all his local business people, right? And he would basically be the first point of call if they needed credit. And he actually was able to agree it locally there. And he knew them, and he knew who he could trust and who he couldn't, right? Yep. Now, over the time that, and this was a few years ago, over the time that he was a bank manager, more and more of it got devolved away from him and decentralized and, you know, got more computerized. And towards the end of his career, he said, I'm no longer now making any decisions about any of my customers. It's all being done by computer somewhere over there. And the loss rates went through the roof. Because they didn't understand the local community, the local business need, et cetera, right? And so actually, commercially, it didn't make any sense. But ideologically, because it all went marketing-led and everything else and centralized and computerized, you know, the whole idea of knowing your local customer and knowing how to actually engage with them and help them with their business got lost. And businesses actually, as a result of that, got less good advice and less help to run their businesses. So it was actually a lose-lose.
And that's, can I point out also, that's the that you, what you've described happened in the private sector. You know, there's so much cynicism that we got drummed into us for 50 years, our government's inefficient. No, these banks are massive corporations and they're completely inefficient. They go down this path that you just described. And by the time they recognize it's too late, it hasn't worked. They don't want to recognize it's too late because they've invested so much, right? And they're not going to, someone's got to come along and cut the Gordian knot here. And that's what a public bank can do. We would structure it so that, and this is our proposal, that we're not talking about Australia Post getting a banking license. There's technical reasons for that, but our proposal is that you would set up a postal banking corporation, which we've named the Commonwealth Postal Savings Bank, and that banking corporation would be a proper bank with proper staff. It would have regional headquarters, but the relationship with the post office is it would have one retail outlet, and that's through post offices, and it would pay for that retail outlet and pay well, so that works for the in a symbiotic relationship with the post office. The post office, the person at the post office would have enough, because if they get more business because they're also a bank, they'd have enough income from being a bank to be able to employ the staff, so the post office isn't going to be crowded. But they would take your cash, give you your withdrawal, but also what they do now, you can go to the post office and begin the process of applying for a loan now through the 70 odd financial institutions that Bank at Post represents. You can do that now. The post office helps you with the paperwork, and then you get in touch with the financial institution you're applying through. It would be a very similar thing, but what they would do is put you in touch as the borrower to the local regional banking headquarters of the postal bank, and they would be the people who know. And they might, you know, and if they do their due diligence, that would be asking, you know, getting to know the local communities, asking the local post office manager, or what do you think about this idea, etc., and getting that much better real-time feedback on the ground of what could be a good you know, safe loan, you know, good investment, that sort of thing. I'll give you one example that's I've probably used in the show before that's personal to me. I mean, you know, I love my wife. I love my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is a great mother-in-law. I've never had any complaints about her. She's I'm not one of those people that makes mother-in-law jokes. She's my favorite mother-in-law. One of the reasons why is because she owns a pub. That's always helped. I'd love her anyway. But she has a monopoly. She has the only pub in town, but she's at an age where she wants to sell it, and she can't sell it to anybody. And all the people who are interested, when they try and apply for a loan at the bank refuses to lend to them. This is for a monopoly. You can't, not only can, the old saying, you can't go bust with a brewery. Well, this is a monopoly, this one, right? And the banks in the headquarters in Sydney who are making decisions do not understand this town in Western Australia and how you cannot lose money on this, right? And it's just, it's bizarre. It's a bizarre example of how broken the system actually is. A postal bank operating the way that we're talking about can turn that around.
Absolutely. Well, let's go on with the dot points.
Okay. And then invest surplus deposits in national economic development. This is something that postal banks have been able, have shown they've been able to do around the world, that you can, the government can attach to the postal bank or associate the postal bank with that, with a development banking mechanism to make those long-term, that, that's there for long-term investments. And so when you post, when you bank with the postal bank, your deposits can also not just be used for local loans to small and medium enterprises in your area, et cetera, but can be used for economic development type loans, which would also be fully government guaranteed because you're investing in another government institution, but that you can know that your savings are helping the economic development of Australia. And then finally, lift banking conduct standards. And this is probably almost worth leading with this one. Anyway, this is the essential idea that what you would be doing with the postal bank is forcing the private banks to compete. At the moment, they are an oligopoly. They don't compete at all. You would force them to compete with a public option. And that is probably the best virtue of the postal bank of all. Because what that does is it does, you while you're providing direct banking services, the private banks will recognize that if they don't match that, they will lose customers, right? And we can, and far more efficiently than anything that came out of the Royal Commission, you can lift the banking standards in Australia, and currently we don't have that. This is not just a Citizens Party idea and Martin North idea, right? The Licensed Post Office Group, which represents the interests of the 2,850 small businesses who run post offices, they've called for a postal bank. Established, this is the call there below in bold, establish a postal bank to service small and medium enterprises and help sustain the network, postal network, and fund infrastructure. This is the great Martin North. And if and I was going to make a joke, Martin, which I will, if you know, you're now so popular, you've been on people's TV screens a lot lately, right? So we thought we'd use your endorsement of the bank and point out to people, hey, that's Mr. Doomsday. If he thinks it's a good idea, it must be. And this is what you wrote to the Australia Post Inquiry last year. Opportunity exists to develop a strategy by which Australia Post becomes a new force in financial services via its existing LPO network. It would bring real competition to the banking sector. Per Capita is a leading think tank associated with the Labor Party. Excellent report from 2020. The whole thing is how Post Bank could work. It says a government-owned bank offers many benefits to Australians, including improving services for currently underbanked customers, especially in rural and regional areas, improving standards across the financial services industry, and providing stability to Australia's economy in times of volatility in international financial markets. Some headlines there where the media has picked up on this over an issue. Over the journey, Australia Post should become the public-owned bank we so desperately need. Calls for a public bank grow. Two economists at the University of Melbourne back in 2015, does Australia need a new banking model? We suggest the establishment of a public sector institution that provides core financial services. And, of course, that can be done through a post office bank. The Communications Workers Union, as a subsidiary of the Communications Electrical and Plumbing Union, they've been pushing this for 10 years. We need a postal bank. Right, they represent Australia Post workers, so they know the Australia Post network better than anybody. And this has been something that they've long identified. Look, this can improve Australia Post, and of course, it can provide the one-stop shopping for communities and help fill the vacuums that have been created by the banks and other service withdrawals from regional and rural Australia. It got some this press coverage at the time in the Sydney Morning Herald, etc. Can Australia Post become the next big bank? Six leading economists, Joshua Gans, Nicholas Gruen, Christopher Joyce, Stephen King, John Quigg, and Sam Wiley. That's quite a spectrum that they represent, those six leading economists, back in 2009. They just posed the question, is there a role for a publicly owned entity akin to Kiwi Bank in New Zealand to offer essential services in Australia's financial sector, leveraging off unique government infrastructure, example, Australia Post, right? And when they wrote this as an op-ed in The Age back in 2009, all hell broke loose and everyone was focused on the People's Bank. This led to headline of, here you go, People's Bank to break the big four. And Joshua Gans here, the guy at the top, he wrote a follow-up a week later. He said, we were just putting a suggestion out there among a series of suggestions of what a financial system inquiry should look at. They said, we can't believe how much the People's Bank idea took off. We didn't even call it that. But it demonstrated to them there's a big appetite for this, right? And so then you think, well, why doesn't it go anywhere? Well, because you're up against the most powerful lobby of all, the private banks. This is a good map. The green is where there's a full-fledged postal bank, and the blue is where there are postal gyro centers and savings banks, right? So China has a postal bank, Japan has a postal bank. That's one of the probably Kazakhstan there. Iran, France, anyway, New Zealand. This is a common phenomenon around the world, and they're successful. I did an interview on our show, Martin, Citizens Insights show, which people can see, where with the former cabinet minister of New Zealand, Matt Robson, about how the postal bank worked. And people can look at that. And I believe you're going to be talking to Matt soon yourself anyway to discuss similarly. He tells it was his party that set up Kiwi Bank, and the campaign to do it was brilliant. I interviewed him, so people can see that this is actually a fight you can win.
Yeah, Robbie, just on that, I'm recording a show with him tomorrow.
Okay, so look forward to that.
Quite good timing. Yeah, absolutely. And he's committed to take me through some of those journey points and, you know, why it was so important, how they went about it and what the success rate was. It's an amazing story. And, you know, you could argue that if they can do it, anybody can do it. But actually, the whole process was really fascinating. So I think it'll be a really interesting show tomorrow.
Yeah, well, definitely. I heartily recommend it. Matt's a great guy. Yeah. All right. I won't go through it all because we're running out of time here. But Japan, La Banque Postale, in France, and we call ours the Commonwealth Postal Savings Bank. We've had the Narrabri Council passed a resolution last year endorsing our bill. Banana Shire Council in Queensland did it. Shire of Yilgarn in Western Australia has done it. We're getting out the message and asking more councils to pass resolutions for this. So we have a bill. Bob Catter has long said that he wants to introduce it. So it's just about finding the right time for that. What we want to do is you got to understand you got to build the political will in the community and in the building, i.e. in Parliament. That's where your phone call is so important. If what we've covered today, you get that this is something that would be of great benefit to Australia, don't be a passive supporter. Be an active supporter. Send an email. So we'll put the link below. That is the link to the Parliament's website where you can find the senators and members. Find your local member for your electorate and send them an email and make a phone call. And the phone call, don't be intimidated. Some people are intimidated by the idea of a phone call saying, can I really explain this very well? It's not about, if you can, go ahead and make a proper phone call. But even if you just send an email where you say, look, please support the postal bank. Here's why I support it. But then follow it up and just say to them, did you get my email? And what happens is the staff will go through and say, yes, we've got your email. That immediately flags your email to them, right? And they know that there's people in the community that are very committed to this, to the point they'd make phone calls. And what that does, it gets it to the front of the queue for the Member of Parliament. And then as the discussion builds in Parliament House, whatever they are told about it, they're also aware that there's support in their communities for it, among their constituents. And whatever the view of the Member of Parliament is, that support among their constituents is at least as important as their own view, right? And so if they're anti, it might weaken it. If they're pro, it'll turbocharge it. If they're on the fence, it'll tip them over the right way. Your feedback to your Member of Parliament is crucial. So we're not asking them to support a bill. Like, there is a bill in existence, and you can find that on our website. If you want any more information, just email info@citizensparty.org.au. If you say the viewer want a copy of the bill, you can email that. We can email you the PDF for that, or you can find it on the Postbank section of our website. And you can provide that to your member of parliament if they, if you get that feedback saying, well, what is the bill, et cetera. We can do all that. I'm going to be in the building. I've already put out an email to every member of parliament saying I'm going to be there with Angela Cramp from the Licensed Post Office Group in the next couple of weeks. Will you please meet with me? Now, the first sitting of parliament can be a little bit chaotic, especially when there's a lot of new members of parliament. They have to do maiden speeches, et cetera. So I don't know how many meetings we're necessarily going to get the first time, but if you get through to them as their constituent, that's going to make them more motivated to want to meet us, and we will explain to them this concept, right? And then when a bill is introduced, then they've got we've laid the best possible foundation, and then, you know, this can become a real fight. We can stack at least shift things in our favour, because we are up against the banks, we're up against the banking association. They're going to be coming up with all sorts of reasons not to do this. Right, they'll be screaming about it, and the politicians, unfortunately, go to water. You know, they're used to doing what the banking associations say. Well, it's them versus the people of Australia, right? And that's why your role, you the viewer now, is very important. Please get involved and make the phone call.
Yeah, Robbie, very important. And I'll just make one other point. You know, this whole question of deposit bail-in and all those things, right? I just want to come back and cycle around again. This would be a very good way of taking that issue completely off the table, right? Yep. Because as we said at the top, deposits in this entity would actually be guaranteed 100%. And I have a feeling, given the uncertainties out there in the community and in the financial sector, that could be a very strong motivating factor as to why this makes a whole lot of sense.
Oh, I think so too. It'll be a safe harbour in the financial system. And then if they don't want, for the politicians, for APRA, for the Treasury, the people who may have the say over a bail-in, they'll know, well, if we even dream of this, everyone's going to go to the public bank, right? We will destroy our own private banking system. Yep. And they're not going to want to do that. This will not destroy the banking system. It'll make it stronger,
yep,
right? Absolutely. By making it more honest, et cetera. But they will, if they persist with their bastardry, they will destroy it. So get behind this, people. This is the we've got to win this. This is a fight back against neoliberalism. It's had its day. It's done its damage. We've got to repair it. And for Australia, the first step is a postal bank.
Thanks very much, Robbie. Appreciate your time today. We'll put some links and things below. And, once again, it's about democracy at work. And yep, democracy is those who turn up and make an effort and do things. And this is a great opportunity to take that opportunity. Thanks, Robbie. See you again later.
Thanks, Martin.
See ya. Take care.
You too.